This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ask most Americans about the revolution that gave birth to their nation, and they'll conjure a handful of iconic images and ideas: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the shot heard round the world, George Washington crossing the Delaware. And when we do pursue a deeper understanding of the American Revolution, we're often confronted with extreme perspectives, from flag-waving narratives that depict the whole affair as an idealistic struggle against a distant and despotic king, to a cynical, revisionist treatments that say it was all the work of a disgruntled bunch of rich colonial merchants who got tired of paying taxes. The real history of the American Revolution is a riveting tour de force that's meant to enlighten anyone who wants to learn the true story about the causes, the conduct, and the outcome of a conflict that was in many ways unique in world history. The author of The Real History of the American Revolution joins us on the long line, Alan Axelrod, a prolific writer of over 60 books, including Profiles in Audacity and the Business Week bestsellers Patent on Leadership and Elizabeth the First CEO. Alan, welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us. The first thing I have to tell you, and we're going to be giving away a free copy of this book at the end of the interview, but the first thing I have to tell you is the design of the jacket is so clever. It's actually, this book was produced to look like a really old book. It's pretty cool.
Right.
Now, what were your thoughts on that when you first saw that?
Well, I like it. I mean, I think it's a very attractive book. I hope that people will want it for themselves, but will also want to give it as a gift. It's, I think it's a design that's very evocative of a kind of a heritage of the nation.
Now, we all grow up in grade school learning about this story, and we learn sort of the flag-waving narrative when we're in grade school, and then perhaps if you're in college, you learn sort of the revisionist, that it was all a bunch of rich guys who didn't want to pay taxes. What is the truth about the origins of this great revolution that gave birth to America?
Well, it is truly a unique event in history. It is, on the one hand, it was a very conservative revolution. It was not a revolution to claim some new rights or anything like that. It was a revolution to recover the rights that colonists felt they had as English men and women. These were rights that were guaranteed by the Magna Carta back in 1215. These rights included, paramountly, that you would not be taxed by the king, only Parliament could tax you, and that you had the right to participate in your own taxation. That is, you were represented in Parliament. So these were not simply taxes being imposed on you, they were taxes imposed with your consent and for the common good. Well, the problem is that the English men and women who were in America were not represented in Parliament, and in practical terms, never really could be represented in Parliament. So the taxes that were suddenly imposed upon them were perceived as tyrannical in the root sense of the word. They were simply the work of tyranny. A government in which you had no voice, no say whatsoever. So on the one hand, the purpose of the revolution was simply to get what every other English man and woman living in England already enjoyed. But the flip side of that is that the object of the revolution, once it was decided that independence would be the object of the revolution, was to create a nation not based on what nations had been based on in the past, which was maybe a tribal affiliation of some sort, or the hereditary claim of a king or other ruler, or perhaps a religious affiliation, but to base this nation on an idea, on the idea that we're entitled to certain rights by nature or by God. And these are rights that are unalienable, that cannot be taken away from you. And this idea would be protected by law. and the country would be founded not on the basis of a king, not on the basis of a religion, not on the basis of a tribe, but on the basis of a set of laws, which eventually became the Constitution. It was unique. It had never been tried before. There had been democracies in the Greek world. There was even one active republic in Europe. In the Netherlands was a republic, didn't have a king. But none of these nations made so bold as to say, well, let's have a nation founded on an idea. It was, and it's never been done since.
My guest is best-selling author Alan Axelrod. His new book is The Real History of the American Revolution. Alan, tell us a few more things, perhaps little tidbits that you dug up in your research when you went back to rediscover this story that most of us might not be familiar with.
Well, I think the main misconception about the Revolution, there's a couple of them, but there is an idea, first of all, that the Revolution was really the work of disgruntled merchants and plantation owners who were quite wealthy, didn't want to pay taxes. Well, that wasn't the case. They knew that you had to pay taxes. As Franklin said, the only two things that are certain in life are death and taxes. But you weren't going to pay taxes that you had no voice in, that would not purchase for you a role in the government. Now, the fact is, however, that the leaders of the Revolution were, for the most part, wealthy. And far from interpreting this cynically, it's quite amazing. These were, you know, you think of most modern revolutions as being organized by pretty downtrodden people, the proletariat, the peasants. People who really have nothing to lose and everything to gain. I mean, they could die, but that's the worst that could happen to them. In the case of the American Revolution, the revolution was organized and led by people who had everything to lose, by people who, if they just kept their mouths shut, could lead pretty good lives, even if they were living in a tyranny. After all, they had spending money, they were rich. But they risked all that because they could not tolerate living under a condition in which they were not free. And it's an incredible degree of self-sacrifice and idealism that's, you know, almost unimaginable today. And you had a bunch of people willing to do it. On the other hand, we tend to think of the Revolution as Americans versus British. Well, it wasn't that at all. In 1815, John Adams wrote a letter to a friend in which he reflected on the Revolution, and he said that, as he saw it, only about a third of his fellow countrymen in 1776 were in favor of independence. And another third were dead set against it, were loyalists, and were willing to fight on behalf of the king. And then there was another third that were either neutral or simply undecided. So the America went into this war very much divided, and the conduct of the war became in large measure trying to unify the
best-selling author Alan Axelrod. His new book is The Real History of the American Revolution, A New Look at the Past, and we'll be giving away a copy of this book in just a few minutes. Alan, I would be remiss here in Charlottesville if I didn't ask you about Mr. Jefferson. What did you learn about Mr. Jefferson when you were doing all the research for this wonderful book?
Well, Jefferson is a great man, he, of course, was the author of the Declaration of Independence, drafted into or pressed into that service by John Adams, who persuaded him that he, Jefferson, was a better writer than Adams and was much more likable. Adams said that Adams was obnoxious, whereas everybody loved Jefferson, so that you, Thomas, should be the author of the Declaration of Independence. It would go better. He did not fare particularly well in the Revolution, however, as governor of Virginia. you know, the principal thing he did was leave the state, barely ahead of a British invasion. He was not a particularly good wartime governor. I think when you look at Jefferson ideologically, you know, what emerges in the whole revolutionary period is that you had a group of brilliant men who were bitterly opposed to one another in many ways, yet who all had a common goal, which was to create this new free government. Yet they disagreed extravagantly on how to do it. And you look at for example, Adams and Jefferson, and they're almost polar opposites. Jefferson believed in the essential goodness of people, that in a free government, if you could have a truly free government, the best of humanity would naturally rise to the surface and take the lead in government. Adams said, well, that's nonsense, that the only real force that animates humanity is a lust for power, and you've got to control that in some way. And it was through this these contrasting ideas that the American government took shape, because as much as they disagreed with each other, they sort of kept their eye on the ball. They had one goal, and they were able to, you know, to disagree without being disagreeable. And what emerged was a government that incorporated all sorts of opposites and opposing forces, and one force that kept another force in check, one authority that countermanded another authority, and somehow the whole thing just came together and worked. People had a lot of goodwill. I mean, it's something that's seems conspicuously absent in today's political scene.
Best-selling author Alan Axelrod is my guest. The book is The Real History of the American Revolution. Steve is online, too. Steve, thanks for the call. You're on with historian Alan Axelrod. Go right ahead.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Great.
I wanted to thank you, first of all, for writing a book about our founding fathers. It's sad how woefully uninformed our population is about the founding fathers. But I had just a quick question, wondering if you could, based on where we are today and what you think the founding fathers might have intended, how they would think we've done when it comes to the way we set up our tax system.
I think they would be bewildered by it. I think a lot of them would be impressed by the idea of a graduated income tax. That is, the idea trying to make taxes proportional to wealth. But, of course, the implementation of this hasn't gone the way I think anybody planned, and I honestly think they would be totally bewildered by this. I don't know if everyone would be so thrilled about the idea of taxing income in the first place. I think certainly Jefferson and the other Democratic Republicans, or Republicans, whatever you want to call them, would see the present tax system as giving the federal government far too much power.
Steve, thank you so much for the call. And we should point out, it's an interesting point there with Jefferson, because even though he was against the taxes, he was also very much against, you know, a ruling class of, you know, inherited wealth and privilege. He really did try to go after those that old guard of inherited money.
True.
And really thought that could eventually corrupt the country if we let people stockpile these great estates, which, of course, that's
true.
What's happened.
He would certainly not favor the repeal of the so-called death tax.
No, not at all. He would probably really like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it is an instrument that keeps families, like the Bush family is just one example, from building huge inherited wealth that they then pass on to their children, creating this ruling class that they were fighting against in England.
Correct. And Adams, that was one of the things that Adams and Jefferson agreed on. In fact, Adams was far more fearful than Jefferson was of an aristocracy. Jefferson feared putting a lot of power in one individual, in a president. Adams feared having a lot of power shared by a small aristocracy. He thought that was even worse.
Best-selling author Alan Axelrod. The book is The Real History of the American Revolution, and we'll give away a copy to the first caller at 977-1070. Alan, thank you so much. It's a beautiful book.
It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.